Wei Walatasi na Niki Pekasin, Tulusi Moyen, Tulusi Mato, Tulusi Phil. I'm your host, and welcome to Taka Impact. As always, we are bridging the past and present by reconnecting you with the spirit and strength of Indigenous cultures. Together, we'll dive into the stories and efforts that are restoring buffalo herds, healing our lands, and revitalizing Native communities. Our guest today is Inkala Earing, a dedicated range ecologist for Tonka Fund and an Ogallala Lakota Wayan from Rapid City, South Dakota, will be joining us. Zinkala brings a wealth of experience and passion to her role. She holds a master's in legal studies from the James E. Rogers College of Law at the University of Arizona, where she was recognized as a National Congress of American Indians Law Scholar. Her educational journey also includes a bachelor in conservation from George Mason University and specialized studies at the Smithsonian Conservation Biology Institute, focusing on species survival and data collection for red pandas and clouded leopards. Zinkala's professional background is as diverse as it is impressive. Before joining Tonka Fund, she served as an intergovernmental affairs liaison with the Great Plains Tribal Leaders Health Board and as a technical service provider with the Intertribal Buffalo Council, where she worked directly with tribal herds and buffalo management. Her experience also includes roles with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Join us as we dive into Zinkala's journey, her role in advancing buffalo restoration efforts, and her broader impact on conservation and community health. Welcome to the show, Zinkala. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
So the first thing I got to ask, and when I look at your long list of stuff that you've worked on for the last decade and, you know, probably further than that, is how can you share with me how you go from legal studies to range ecologist? Was it your heritage that brought you circle back to that? Like what made you make such a huge leap from, you know, a legal profession into, you know, working with the environment?
Yeah. To me, actually, I don't see them so different from each other. I see how everything's really connected. I've always had an interest in the outdoors environment, but with that is also the health of our people and the health of the land. And those two things together, you want to understand how you can impact change. And policy is one of those areas that I saw fit to really do that. And so to me, I'm kind of merging them is the way I like to think about it.
It's really solid thought process, because I would have never been able to connect the leap between those two personally. But you're right. I mean, changing policy and making things more accessible to those who need it definitely would play a massive role in you know, pushing things forward, especially from a conservation effort or a stance that way. You can't have one without the other in that regards, in my opinion. So I can see how you brought that around. Now, that being said, prior to me talking with you and prior to, working with Tonka Fund, I had no idea what a range ecologist was, you know, what your work is, kind of like, you know, I was just very naive to it. Could you walk me through exactly what a range ecologist is and what do you do on a day to day?
Sure. So there comes with it that educational background. Do have my bachelor's in conservation. So I learned about rangeland health and how to monitor that. And so looking at land ecology and how it relates to buffalo too, is you want to understand how healthy the land is, and that can tell you your carrying capacity for buffalo, or at least how many animals you can put on the land sustainably. And so what we do is we worked with an organization called SnapLands and received rangeland monitoring training. And so we can go and visit buffalo herds and do on the ground work and see how land is changing over time and the specific vegetation, forage production, see how much is available to the buffalo. And so part of that is what I do on the groundwork. A lot of the behind the scenes is enrolling people in our Climate Smart program. So it's contracts and agreements, where I do think policy and legal writing comes in a little bit with that, and doing a lot of mapping of their Climate Smart practices.
Yeah, anything that's paperwork oriented, well, the legal aspect is definitely going to give you a hand there, especially with the amount of work that you probably had to put in to get that whole role sorted out. So that makes sense to me. I do have a question though, in regards to land soil and what that looks like. So could you give me an example of what poor soil would look like, and what an example of something that maybe was more soil nutrient dense, what that looks like. Have you ever seen, I guess, the two comparisons?
I know that for our program, we're working with Yardstick and they're doing the soil sampling and they're looking at carbon sequestration and how carbon is stored in the ground and how buffalo may influence that is part of their study that they're doing. The nutrients and the health of the soil really depends on where you are, depending on the environment. And so, there's a web soil survey is a resource that we use and look up and see what kind of soil type is there, and it will give you a good idea of the mineral content and things like that.
Okay, that makes sense. My next question is kind of like in comparison, because you've worked with quite a few different animal types, obviously, in your career. I mentioned that in your intro that you worked with clouded leopards and red pandas. Was your work always kind of like, was your interest in wildlife always part of you? Is it something that is you always wanted to kind of like you found yourself drawn to? Or is this just kind of like where the path has taken you? And if so, how did you end up with buffalo?
It's probably a little bit of both. I've always been interested in wildlife since I was a kid, researching it like a nerd. So it's just been a passion of mine that I think was kind of innate, or I just kind of had that within me. But I've also had a path throughout my career of working in health, environment, and policy. And so those things to me are all interconnected and so I've jumped around a bit, but in my head, they're all very related to each other.
Could you draw a comparison of how like land-wise, like is there a major difference between like a buffalo, for example, or like a red panda, like for the amount of like land and territory that they require, or like maybe could you explain the differences in the climate sense of the word between the two?
Yeah, so there's definitely a difference between them in that buffalo require large landscape, as you know. So traversing miles, and they've compared it to cattle as well, that buffalo have more movement within their day than cattle do. And so they're constantly grazing, constantly moving, whereas cattle are kind of seen in grazing in one location. So you really have to rotate your animals too, and that's part of what we do with our Climate Smart program is doing sustainable practices like rotational grazing. And thinking about all the different species I've worked with, they all have their unique habitats, characteristics, behaviors, and so I've been able to kind of learn about those and be interested in them individually too.
I imagine all of that comes with quite a range of challenges as you traverse that new landscape. In buffalo management and restoration, are there any notable challenges that you've been kind of facing throughout your time with Tonka Fund, or realistically during that time, is there anything that you can that you know you were able to face those challenges with? So if there was like I don't know, it's like I know one thing comes to mind immediately when you talk about buffalo and the amount of land that they need, is just corralling them, right? Keeping them within a fencing area or letting them go free. I mean, realistically, a buffalo goes where a buffalo wants to go. No fence is going to stop it. But that's the type of challenge that I would see as being difficult to deal with while trying to gather the data you need as a range ecologist. Can you think of any times like maybe similar to that that you've had some issues, and how did you really face that?
Yeah, I've seen something that people are running into is the need for land acquisition. And so the differences in travel land too play a role in how they're able to acquire their leases, or if it's allotted land that was granted through generations, things like that. And to be able to have the capacity for buffalo, you need a certain amount of acreage depending on the vegetation type and things like that. So what we see is people needing more land for their buffalo if they want to grow their herd, or they're going to have to practice really intense rotational grazing. And with that requires fencing, and it's expensive and tedious to try to move animals very frequently. So the benefit would be to have a large land size if you can.
Gotcha. So you work, you know, really work specifically in the climate smart role of things. Could you talk to me a little bit about the climate smart program, what that looks like, and how it meshes with Tonka Fund's mission of restoring the lands, lives, and economies to Native people?
So the Climate Smart program, Tonka Fund is enrolled, involved with it because of a grant with USDA, and we're partnering with the South Dakota State University on this as well. But funding came in to basically reward ranchers for the good work that they're doing on the ground. And Climate Smart program is available to both Native and non-Native ranchers, buffalo or cattle. And so it's a little bit different than what Tonka Fund has traditionally worked with, where it's primarily Native producers. But this has kind of expanded this Climate Smart program to enroll more diverse applicants, I guess, based on where they're located and what kind of animals they're working with. And the good work we want to see people doing is there's a list of them recognized by Natural Resource Conservation Service as climate smart practices. So there's range planting, which is basically native seeds, transitioning into prairie or improving your prairie pasture lands. There's forage planting, kind of like hay. Silvopasture is management of grazing with trees, riparian herbaceous cover, prescribed burning. We see people doing prescribed burning to improve the health of the land. And so there's several ones that we're looking at, but we incentivize these practices by providing funding for them to implement them. And this funding can be used to do these practices and do them in a sustainable way.
And what's the best way for a rancher to reach out if they wanted to partake in you know, the opportunities that are available through this program? Is it best just to contact Tonka Fund or contact you? How do you think is the best way to do that in an event that they need to?
Yeah, we have information on our website. So if they're interested in learning more, they can always check out tonkafund.org. And myself and Jeanette Moore are listed on there as your contacts to go to. We can assist you with the application, provide technical assistance in getting you enrolled.
I think that's one of the great things that Tonka Fund really does as an organization is they really help with the technical side of things. In a previous episode, I spoke with Dawn Sherman, and she spoke to all the many things that Tonka Fund basically touches on the technical side that you would not think of when you think of ranching traditionally, right? The paperwork that goes in it, the mapping, all the different funding that can be out there or that you need in order to build something as simple as a fence on property. There's a lot of stuff that Tonka Fund works with. So, you know, this is just another avenue to that, I would say, you know, based off of everything I know about it. My next question I have for you, though, ties kind of into all of this as well. When you think of buffalo conservation and management and how that ties into the Climate Smart programs that you work with, what do you believe are some of the long-term goals that you're hoping to see, you know, 5 years out, 10 years out? What are you hoping to see out of, you know, what you're currently monitoring?
South Dakota State University has intense research sites for both buffalo and cattle. And there they're tracking methane emissions from the cattle and the buffalo and seeing how they're impacting our environment, but also how the grazing influences the grasslands or the pasture, and checking out that carbon sequestration. So the goal over time is to put the science behind what we think we know is that buffalo are powerful and sustainable grazers at the same time, and that are actually good for the environment despite the methane emissions, that they're also improving the land by the kind of grazing that they do.
Okay, makes sense. In the interim, I know that you worked with a variety of other programs currently, both through Tonka Fund and part of the Climate Smart. One of the big things that I know you worked on recently was an internship program with Tonka Fund that I believe stemmed from something called the Buffalo Lifeway Society. Could you talk a little bit about what that was and you know what the internships were all about?
Yeah, so we were able to hire on some interns, and they have diverse backgrounds from Kansas, here in South Dakota, as well as Texas. They represented all Native women veterans, which is pretty neat too. And their work was really learning about the kind of work Jeanette and I do as range ecologists. And part of that is looking up the Natural Resource Conservation Service, or the NRCS, conservation practice standards. And those are what are deemed climate smart. And those have a lot of guidelines that we have to ensure that the landowners are following, so that they meet the criteria and are, respecting the requirements for each practice. So they did a compare and contrast essay based on each state. Because every state, of course, has their own guidelines. So we have to check those out. And then also did a Google Earth mapping assignment. That's what I've been using to create the maps of climate smart practices. So they learned how to do that. And they also, their main focus was an independent buffalo research study. So they all completed comprehensive research essays. One of them was about the environmental differences between cattle and buffalo. One of them was rangeland and ecology and the management and monitoring of buffalo in Texas. And another one was kind of learning about land stewardship and indigenous pathways into the career field in Kansas. So they had that independence to really choose what their focus was and dive into it. They also visited South Dakota for a week-long immersive opportunity where they all got to know each other. Since they're all in different states, it was a remote internship. It was nice to bring them all together. And in that, we visited a couple of different buffalo herds. One of them is Kramer Ranch in Hermosa, South Dakota, which is also the SDSU Research Intensive Site. So we got to see how they're green feed freezing
It's
the green feed technology, there's the word.
Yep.
The green feed technology is introduced and used on that ranch. And then also visited two tribal herds, one in Pine Ridge, one in Rosebud, and trying to get them enrolled in the Climate Smart program as well, so that we kept them busy this summer.
I'd say it sounds like they were nonstop from the second their internship hit to the very end. When you think back on the internship and you think back of the youth perspective of things, did anything surprise you from like how engaged they were, or did anything surprise you with like their ideas, that kind of thing? It's like, because one of the most valuable resources I've always thought comes from those who are going to inevitably be the future. I see it in my own children. I see it in other youth that I interact with throughout the years. Was anything notable to you about their thoughts and feelings on what they were working on?
Yeah, I think something I noticed was that they each had different approaches into their work and interest level within each one. So the conservation practice standards I was mentioning are these kind of very federal report language and a little bit difficult to understand. But one of the interns found them extremely helpful in learning about what kind of practices are out there. and found an interest in it. So that surprised me because, you know, interns reading paperwork and being exciting. I'm like, yeah, that's the way to go because I'm kind of like that too. So I noticed some of that, and also looking at environmental differences between the cattle and the bison, like I was mentioning, and just seeing how people can be involved with it. So I think their passions really showed through in the work that they were doing. And if they had any questions, they were always able to come to Jeanette and I. So we had that open conversation between us as well.
Yeah, and I was able to interact with the interns as well throughout the internship. I was fortunate to have been down there for that trip in South Dakota, and you know everything you said there was pretty spot on. They all had a really awesome level of interest, and when they were engaged with something, which is pretty much all the time, you could really see like their thought patterns and their ideas really come to life, and you were able to, you know, help foster that growth in the internship. So it's like it is really rewarding on my end being able to watch them learn from you and grow their own knowledge base based off of, you know, the teachings that you were going through. And it, you know, saying that one of them was interested in the paperwork side of it, it cracks me up because like I personally, that's not me. It's like I'm not a paperwork person. After my years in the military, it's like I'm done with paperwork for the rest of my life. Am I gonna even dodge it? But you know, I'm glad that there are others out there who are like you, and you know, they want to know the nuances of the paperwork. They want to know the nuances of the rules and the laws that are being applied to what they're getting ready to push out into the world. So, you know, I think that the youth that we had and the internships that we were able to provide were really fascinating. And I think that you know, I think we all got to learn something out of it, which was pretty unique in itself.
Yeah, for sure. One thing I noticed too is their enjoyment in doing the field work we showed them. So one of those days we did spend in the Black Hills and showed them the rangeland monitoring that we learned from Snaplams. And part of that is putting down hoops. And within that hoop, we read the vegetation level. We also pulled out some soil, looked at the texture, kind of learned about that as well. And so they enjoyed getting their hands in the field and really seeing what it looks like on the ground.
And these internships are not just for 1 year. They can return later on, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Correct. It's a 5-year grant. So for the term of the grant award, we're able to hire on 2 interns every summer. And we're always
Nice.
looking for more opportunities and funding to hire more interns.
Best way to reach out to you again through that Tonka Fund website, correct?
Yes.
And then there'll be opportunities, obviously, for those internships as it gets closer to those times. That being said, when you really think about where you started and where you're at today, is there any advice that you'd give to you know, maybe some young Native American individuals interested in pursuing careers in either conservation or environmental science, or you know, maybe even just interested in going to universities? Like, is there any advice that you'd like to give to those individuals who may not know the best places to start, and you know, how do you get there?
That's a good question. And it's one that's not really asked often, so I really appreciate it too. But something I kind of ran into in my education and my work experience is not really believing in myself and having to have mentors in my life that really believed in me and said, yeah, you can do it. Apply to that law school program, where, yeah, go work at Tonga Fund. So there's things like that where I didn't have that background within myself where I really needed to rely on good advice and mentors in my life. And so I would encourage people to really believe in themselves because other people see it too. And you really just have to make that first step and show the effort behind it.
I love that. I think that's really sage advice. I feel like a lot of us are afraid to start something, because we get lost in thought, right? We get lost in the what if, so to speak. You know, what if we trip? What if we fall? What if we stumble? What if we don't make it? What if and what if, what if? And I feel like, you know, the first thing you got to do in any new endeavor is to just take that step. And I think that, you know, having that support structure, whether it be your friends, your family, your coworkers, whoever it happens to be, to give you that push, to give you that motivation, is definitely, you know, something that you should take advantage of, because there's always going to be people out there who are going to support you along the way. And, you know, I believe that when you push yourself just that little bit and you fall, just get back up. It's okay. It's like, brush yourself off. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, you can move on to the next step, and you're going to have people that'll help pick you up too along the way. And, you know, if at any point in time you don't do that, then, you know, I mean, things could be very different. I wouldn't be talking to you today, for example. You would, right? It'd be very, very different circumstances. So, you know, for someone who is young and is looking for, you know, the best advice, I think that's really it, right? It's like, just start with something that you're interested in, start with something that you're passionate about. And if you don't know what that is, that's okay too. You'll find hidden passions, I think, along the way. I don't know about you, but during my school journey, I initially wanted to be in law, like into law and criminology, similar to what you went into. But I very quickly found out that I'm not good at that. It's like, I don't have the attention span to go through legal paperwork. I don't have the attention span to learn, you know, the nuances of the legal system. And then I ended up going into business, because what I did have an interest in was speaking. I was like, public speaking, talking to people. That was something that, you know, for me personally was where my interest lied. And then obviously it brought me here today, to where I'm at. So, I mean, things change is what I'm saying, and it's okay. And it's good to kind of like go with the flow, in that regard. So follow your heart is the best way to go, right?
Yeah, that's great. And something, when you're talking, it reminded me of too, is people saying that you'll learn what you don't want to do as well. When you reach out and take different steps, different opportunities, there is going to be certain things you love about it and certain things you'll say, hey, maybe that's not for me. But through that, you're going to keep growing and you're going to learn more what you want to do, is just trying out all these different things in your life and really being well-rounded.
Yeah. And that goes for everybody. It's like, in a previous episode, like I mentioned before, I was talking with Dawn. She herself went through the same journey where, you know, she actually wanted to be in biology at one point in time, and, you know, stumbled along the way and ended up in a completely different field and, you know, then is now, our executive director. So it's fascinating how, you know, life will take you, right? It'll take you where the different spots that you'll go. And, you know, it's just about taking that first step. That's the big thing. And then kind of go from there. I only have like one last question for you. And it's an interesting one. It's looking back at your career. When you think about everything you've done to get to where you are right now today, what achievements or achievement are you most proud of? And, you know, what is there any life lessons that you'd like to share in, you know, creating that achievement?
Yeah. I think part of it is involvement with youth. So when we did have that internship, we visited a ranch in Pine Ridge, and we also met some other young people. These ones were in high school. And one of the questions I received from their advisor is, did you think you would be here when you were their age? Did you think you would be where you're at right now? And I didn't at the time. I struggled in high school. Struggled in college. So there's that story. A lot of times I just tried very, very hard to kind of reach my goals. And so I think when I'm looking back, the proudest moment would really be showing those youth you can do things you didn't think you could do, and just trying to be that role model for them in the best way that I can.
Well, I definitely would say that, you know, you're definitely a beacon in the environment and conservation light. It's like, you're very knowledgeable and, you know, how to reach, you know, our interns that we've been working with. And I think that is going to continue to show itself over the next few years, because like I said, it's a 5-year grant. Like, I'm looking forward to seeing how you invest not only in the Climate Smart program, but working as a range ecologist for Tonka Fund, and just seeing, where it takes you and where it takes our next generation of youth, and hopefully it brings more young range ecologists into the field. I know our last internship, I can speak with absolute confidence, a lot of them want to do what you do on a day-to-day. they were really happy for it. They were like, nope, I'm going to be out there working next to Kala. I'm going to be out there working next to Jeanette. It's like, this is such a cool way to spend a career. So, I mean, I think that, in the next upcoming years, we're going to see more of that.
Yeah, for sure.
Alrighty. Well, Alan, thank you very much for being on the show today, just speaking a little bit about what you do and how range ecology fits directly into Tonka Fund's lands, lives, and economies.
And a special Wallen thank you to Delaney Apple and his Lakota Youth Group, whom sing the songs at the beginning and end of this episode.